the biggest change and the most impactful change that I've made over the years that I think has directly contributed to such successful launches is that I go in with the same attitude and I keep that attitude regardless of how things are going. Hey, hey, and welcome back to On Your Terms. I'm your host, Sam Vanderwielen, and we're in part two of our launch series here in 2024. So last week we talked about, in part one, we talked about the numbers and for my own promo and kind of how we got there. And then I also taught you about how we structure launches, how we plan those out, and how I kind of follow a reverse engineering process in order to make sure that these things go really smoothly. More than anything, I would say we talked about step zero and why step zero, I think, is the most important step, even though it's called step zero. But step zero is really important to building your audience, building up your list, and having people to actually sell to and hype up, because those are the people we're going to be talking about today. We're going to talk about that process actually today, about hyping the people up, but we got to have people there first. Once you've done all of that, you have to start building hype for the launch that's coming. So it might be tempting to just like jump right into the launch, do all that kind of stuff. But actually what we're going to talk about today is equally as important as the sales period. So you're definitely going to want to listen to this. Today we're going to learn how to actually hype people up, how to get people excited, and what that actually has to do with making sure that you get a lot of people to show up for your live event that's associated with your launch, that you get a lot of people to, purchase your product once you launch it. But it's really, really important that you plan and execute properly this hype and pre-launch period. At the end of today's episode too, I'm going to answer some questions that you submitted on Instagram to me when I asked what you wanted to know about how I planned my launch, how I executed about a $300,000 launch in February. And I can't wait to answer those questions for you at the end. So if you remember in part one of the series, we talked about the launch timeline that I follow and that I recommend to people all the time. So we learned how to reverse engineer this timeline and lead up to whenever your item goes on sale or whenever you're going to host a live event and then your thing goes on sale, like maybe you're going to have a webinar and then your stuff goes on sale right afterwards. So we talked about working backwards, like picking the day that the sale starts or picking the day of the live webinar, which might be the same thing, and then reverse engineering, okay, how long do I have to invite people to that live event? How long do I have to tease that it's coming? All of this kind of stuff. So the very first thing is that when we reverse all the way back, like if we go all the way back to the beginning of the timeline that I talked about in part one, I talked about teaser time, hype time, right? The real focus of hype time is to let people know that something's coming. And to get them, like, just get them aware, right? Really all we're focusing right now on is some awareness, maybe some intrigue, like piquing people's interest, getting them to be a little bit like, I can't wait to see what they've got. Like, I want to know what she's got going on, that kind of thing. Or to also just get them really, really excited, right? Building the momentum. I can't even underestimate to you, and I hopefully will say this in like every episode of this series, but I can't like emphasize enough how much your energy, your enthusiasm, and your like embodying the momentum, even if it's manufactured and like a little bit, like you're like psyching yourself up for something, how much that's going to carry over. And so you can imagine that's super, super important when it comes to this hype time, the very, very beginning before you're about to launch. Really in this hype time, we're letting people know that something's coming, whether that's a sale, like you're just hyping up people like, hey, sale's coming. That you're hyping them up, maybe that a live event's coming, like a webinar or a challenge or some kind of other live event of some sort, or that you're going to be hosting some combo of those where like you're going to have a live event, like a webinar followed by a sale, right? That's what I typically do. That's what I do for about 66% of my sales during the year. And then the others are just kind of a straight to sale. There's no right or wrong here. It's really what you like and what makes sense for your product and all that. I have a little bit more expensive of a product. And so for that, I tend to think that it works better to have something. There has to be some kind of live event. It doesn't have to be a webinar, but there has to be something, I think, at least to convert people, especially if people are not, you know, super familiar with you, your brand, or your product. Now, before like the past year and a half, I used to do this hype time to tell people that something was coming in a really like coy way. It was kind of like, this was really popular at the time. If you were in online business at the time and on Instagram and all that, you would hear people all the time be like, I have a big secret. I can't wait to announce my secret on Monday. Is everybody ready for my big secret? And then it got kind of tired because everybody started doing that. And then everyone started being like, yeah, yeah, we know your big secret is that you're going to sell us something, which is not really that fun of a secret, right? So I think, you know, about a year and a half ago, I transitioned out of that and started doing what I still do now. What I would recommend to you as a friend is that I found that it's better to be a little bit more upfront about what is actually coming. So instead of doing the whole, like, I have a secret, instead it's like, I am so excited that, you know, on January 15th, I can't wait to let you know, like, I'm going to be opening up the doors to a live class for you, and it's going to be free, and it's going to be amazing, and here are all the things, and here's all the reasons why for you, right? Always focusing on them. Just turn that spotlight around right from you, right to them. But turning it around to them as to like why this is so good for them, why they should be so excited, how it's going to be so beneficial for them, and really hyping it up for them about why, like, it's so cool that this thing is coming. If you also, or we're talking about a sale, or you're only talking about the sale, same rule applies, right? So sometimes I will, because I usually have a live event followed by a sale, I will talk about like, hey, I have this thing coming. I can't wait for you. It's coming on January 15th and it's going to be a live class. That's, and then do all the things that I just said. And then I'll be like, PS, at least as when the teaser starts, I start by doing the, like, I guess it would be a little bit, like I kind of escalate it as it gets closer and closer to the live event in terms of what I talk about in terms of the sale, but I'll at least drop a hint in the beginning to say, PS, after the live event's over, you might want to keep your eyes peeled because there's going to be a big sale on the Ultimate Bundle, my product, for example. So as it would go further and further into the teaser period, maybe I would drop a few more details, drop a few more hints, maybe even start talking about how much, you know, how much money they're going to save, something like that. But that's essentially how I structure my teasers now versus before. I think that this really helps to prime your audience for a sale that's coming, especially if it's a little bit more expensive. It gives them time to do what they need to do, to make moves, to move something into an account, to budget, to think about it. I personally, and I like that. I just like being upfront, but this is also part of my, like, my core business values. So this aligns with very much with like my style and my values. So this makes sense for me, right? To just be like, hey, I'm not trying to hide anything. Could I create even more hype if I kept it a secret? I don't know. I think most consumers now are pretty savvy, especially when you're dealing with other business owners in the online space. I think people are pretty savvy and they kind of know what you're talking about when you say that. So I just like to kind of, I don't know, follow what's natural for me and be really honest about what's coming. And I think it does help people to plan. Now, in terms of like what kind of components go into a good teaser period, I want you to think about like what, so whether you're offering a live event or you're offering a sale or some combination of the two, I want you to think about like, who is this thing for? Even if you were just saying that about like the live event or the challenge first, right? Who is this for? Why is it helpful to them? Why does that matter? Like, if they got that help, why does that matter? What does that do for them? Why should they care? Right? Keep asking yourself the like, who cares question. Like, when you're writing these teasers or you're writing social media captions or you're talking about it in stories and you're going to think about like what, how you're going to present this to your audience, keep asking yourself the who cares question. Like, why does this matter? So not just like, oh, I have a free class and you guys are going to be able to sign up for it next Monday. Why does that matter? Why should I sign up for it? Why is it going to be helpful to me? Right? They're really busy. So like, why does this thing make the cut? I also think sometimes, you know, people are a little jaded, like, oh, I hear this from people all the time, or I see other people offering this thing. Why should I sign up for this one? So keep that in mind as you're thinking about creating content around your teaser. And don't just tell them, right? Don't just write to them or create content on social media that's just telling them that they should be focused or that they should be hyped. I mean, I also want you to ask them, like get them engaged, like, how hyped are you? Like, give me a rating from 1 to 10, comment back or drop this emoji or ask them how much this thing would help them or interest them or if they've been waiting for something like this. Ask them who's going to be there, like comment, I'm in, you know, any kind of thing that you can do to get them engaged and get them hyped. I also like to create some buy-in, and this was something that worked really, really well in my most recent launch that I've been breaking down through this series. And this was something that my copywriter, Caitlin, had actually suggested that I just thought was so smart. So we created more of this like community accountability period during the teaser part where we asked people. So first, the first couple of emails in our teaser period focused on getting that engagement. So it was like, we announced the big thing, which was like a live class. You're going to get the opportunity to ask me your legal questions live. And then we would at first just say, respond back and tell us from 1 to 10, how excited are you? We got so many responses. And then as the teaser period went on, in our emails, we focused on saying like, hey, I know you've probably been putting this thing off, like getting your business legally protected. Wouldn't it be cool if you committed to coming to this live class and in the 90 minutes, you're going to finally have like a clear plan in place. And so we had them commit to coming and like write back and like we would hold them accountable. And then we also started to create this community feel that it was like, you're all in, like all of you guys are doing this together. So you're all going to like meet me there. We're all peers. We're all colleagues. We're all doing this together. Everyone's going to get their legal stuff in order and it takes a village and we're all going to show up and do this together. Right. So we had a lot of people writing back and doing that. We asked for commitment, like a micro commitment to say like, is February going to be your month that you get legal in order? This all just worked really, really well. I watched it in action and I thought it satisfied both of these things because it got us a lot of engagement, but it also created a lot of this hype and this buy-in that I was really looking for. Now, the final thing about I want to say about teaser before we start talking about some sales stuff is that you want to remember that teaser content should be across the board, should be an all-out blitz in your business. So you should be emailing your list about it, should be talking about it on social, mentioning it everywhere, anywhere that you appear online. There should be stuff about it on your website, like something's coming. I just make sure that this is an all-in thing so that no matter where someone sees you, finds you, you are making sure that they can see this teaser content wherever they follow you online. Now, before we start talking about some teaser stuff that I want you to know and some invite stuff related to having some sort of live event like a webinar or a challenge, I want to talk with you if you've ever been interested in wanting to run a launch that goes straight to a sale. So you don't run a launch that has like a webinars or anything like that, but you just say like coming Monday, my thing's going to be on sale and it's just kind of an all-out sales sprint. You can run promos straight to a sale without a live event. They do very well, right? I do that once a year for my birthday bundle sale. I've done it at various other times. It's really simple. There's no live event. It's just a sale. So I focus really hard on the hype time because once the sale's live, you know, typically it doesn't last that long. Like I do mine for 5 days, for example. So the sale goes live on Monday. It closes on Friday. And so I really refer to these as sales sprints. And I think that in those cases, the teaser period has to do even more work for you because now we're not just teasing that maybe the live event's coming, which then the live event does a lot of the lifting, like the educating of your customer that you need to happen in order for them to convert and like feel comfortable to purchase from you at the end of this thing. So you have to remember that when you're planning out this promotion, that if you're going straight from a teaser to directly to a sale, in your teaser content, I would really be making sure that you're talking about your product very, you know, making sure you're really familiarizing them with what the product is, who it's for, why it's helpful to them, what it helps people to achieve, sharing customer stories, like almost treating it as like a double sale. It's just that you're telling them that it doesn't go on sale until Monday, for example. So that is really, really important. But what I tend to find is more typical is, you know, offering some sort of live event, some sort of free thing that would happen before your sale. Usually this kind of like goes hand in hand with the first day of your sale, but something like a webinar or a challenge or some other live event where you can offer something for free to attract people in. And you have to remember the live event, its real goal is to do its job to get people across the finish line. That's kind of the way that I think of it, right? So somebody is maybe problem aware. They might even be aware of a solution, like that a solution exists. They may or may not know that you are the solution or that your product is the solution to the problem that they're aware of, but there's still some doubt. There's still some concern. There could be doubt in themselves. There could be doubt in your product. They could still be shopping around. They could be wondering if the timing's correct. They could be wondering if they have the time to get it done, right? If they have the money. There are all kinds of objections and things that could be coming up for them. So really the way that I think of the live event, usually in my case, it's a webinar, that the purpose of that webinar is to resolve all of those concerns for them, right? And so, and maybe for some people is to bring some problem awareness and some solution awareness to those people because they come to the like webinar, for example, and maybe they're thinking, I don't really know what I need to have. Like in my case, people might just think, I want to start an online business. And I heard, or I'm sure like I have to get some legal stuff in place, but I don't know what it is. And then they come to my webinar, they see the things that they need to get in place. Then they find out that I have the ultimate bundle and they know that the ultimate bundle is now the solution to the problem they just became aware of. So I think that, you know, whatever live event you choose, it has to do that job and it can do that job when it's planned out correctly. So you want to make sure if you're planning some sort of webinar, a challenge, a masterclass, a Q&A, you know, office hours, whatever you want to do, that it's super on target for the product that you're going to pitch, like the thing that's going on sale during this period. So I kind of like to reverse engineer that as well. So if you take your product first, you think about what kind of live event, like if that webinar, for example, when I went to go create a webinar for the ultimate bundle, I thought about what components does the webinar have to have? What kind of things do I need to teach and talk about in order for the person to leave the webinar at the end thinking, oh, the ultimate bundle is the solution to the problem, right? So I wanted to make sure it directly relates and it makes sense that the same person who would want to watch and sign up for my webinar is the same person who would want to purchase and join the ultimate bundle. Even though I like to run the sale and I always do run the sale across my entire company, like I promote the sale that's going on to my entire email list, on social media, on my podcast, everywhere else, you know, not just to those people who sign up for the webinar. I still see the webinar as sort of like a bonus in the sense that, as I mentioned earlier, like it's an attractor for people who might need more information, more time, or just a little confused before they take the next step. I also think it's a great opportunity for you to showcase what it's like to work with you. And so this is why I never worry, by the way, about being too valuable, like that your webinar has too much value or you're telling people too much stuff. Because I think that, especially for higher ticket items or whatever, I think that people really need to see how you work and if you speak to them. And so I know that for me personally, what ends up happening a lot is that people attend the webinar and they're like, this was so helpful. I can't imagine how helpful the ultimate bundle is, right? Or, you know, they'll say, I've gone to a bunch of webinars like this and nothing has ever made sense. And you were the only person that ended up making sense to me. So I know I want to be a customer of yours. Like I want to be in your community. I want your product. So you have a real opportunity, I think, to change people's minds or open up to people in that sense. I mean, if you do coaching or anything like that, it's like, it's really important that people understand how you work with people and what that's like. And they just feel like attracted to you, right? Like they want to work with you because they're thinking like, I just want to be in that person's orbit. So I wouldn't worry too much about it being valuable or anything like that. The other myth I kind of wanted to put to bed was that webinars are dead. Webinars, I mean, at least my webinar is very much alive and very much healthy. Webinars, I think, still work really well. And I've heard Amy Porterfield say this relatively recently too, is that I think webinars not only still work really well, but that they're also still really smart for higher ticket items. But obviously you can do whatever you want. Like if you want to play with a shorter webinar or a video series, an email or something else. One of my friends does like a live Q&A, kind of more like office hours about it. You can do both. You could do a webinar and then have another office hours, like mid promo. So you really can do whatever you want, but I wouldn't buy into any of the myths that webinars are dead. Okay, so at the top of the show, we talked about how the teaser part is really the first part of the timeline when it comes to a successful launch. This is where we're just telling people something's coming. We're getting them excited. Maybe we're giving them a bit of detail. We're letting them know when things are going to happen. We're working on engagement and buy-in, as we've chatted about. And now it comes time to actually sign up for the live event. Like tickets are available, you know, quote unquote tickets, digital tickets are available. Seats are open. They can sign up for, let's just use a webinar as an example, right? So now we've opened that up. Typically speaking, so the teaser period is the first period. I then call the next period the invite period whenever there's some sort of live event. And I typically run that period anywhere from 7 to 10 days. When you run Facebook ads, you can either run ads a little bit longer. I like to start my ads earlier than the 7 to 10 day period so that they have some time to warm up and get out of the learning period. But if I was just doing this email and on social, I would probably do it for about 7 to 10 days. I would account for the fact that weekends are going to be a little bit quieter on social. You're only going to send out however many emails and all that kind of stuff about it. Essentially, for this 7 to 10 day period, your focus is just to get people to sign up for this live event. That's it. All of your content is geared towards getting as many people as you can to sign up for this live event. So I really, really honed in on sending emails, obviously. So I up my frequency to my email list. I go from sending one a week to like, you know, at first, I think the first week we maybe sent three or four, and then we send like almost every day when it just gets very, very close, but they're short and they're very quick and to the point of like, hey, you only have another day to sign up for this. But really that's my goal. On social media, I was just in an all out sprint for this period, just every single day, face to camera, Instagram stories, even on the weekends for that time period, which I'm not normally on social for the weekend. But I went in an all out sprint to just get as many people to sign up as possible. The other thing is that I utilized ManyChat this time around. So I think that this was my first promo that I utilized ManyChat in this. So what that is like it's automated DM process. So you've probably seen a lot of people, including myself, saying like, DM me the word live webinar or whatever. And then, or the words live webinar. And then when you DM me that, it can automatically DM you back either a link or I can actually get people to sign up for things in my DMs directly. And it integrates with ConvertKit, which is what I use for my email list. It adds people to the list and it's just so much easier. And it's a great, great way to add people consistently to your list, even outside of promo times. So I decided to make it really, really simple this time around and just go all in on this strategy of getting people to comment like live class and, you know, sign up for my webinar in the DMs. And that worked really, really well. I also wouldn't sleep on another kind of like grassroots, you know, definitely a smaller impact strategy, but a grassroots strategy of like during that time period and even for the couple of weeks leading up to it, even before people knew that I had a live webinar coming, when people would send us a DM and ask us a question, I would say, hey, I actually have a live class coming for you in a couple of weeks. Would you like the link to go and sign up for it? And I would let people start signing up for it. And then definitely during that teaser and invite period, I would say to everybody who would ask us a question, anybody who would ask us for the link for my Evergreen webinar, we would write back and say, hey, here's the link, but actually I have a live webinar coming if you want to come live because you get to ask me questions. So we had a bit of a grassroots strategy this time as well. And I think that that really helped. Now the invite period is no different than the teaser period or the sale period or a downsell period or any other period we're going to talk about during this launch series. Because you have to remember during this invite period that the focus is on them, not you. So yes, you're holding a live class or you're holding a challenge or something like that. Why is that a good thing for them? What's in it for them? What are they going to get out of it, right? Keep asking yourself that who cares question that I mentioned earlier. If you talk about something about what the challenge is going to help them do, who cares? Why is that helpful to them, right? What are some examples you can give me about people who you've worked with who have already experienced that and what it's unlocked for them, right? Give me some stories. So you really want to focus on making sure that your, you know, target audience, whoever's listening to this, feels like, this is something I really want to make time for. I can see how helpful this is going to be. Last but not least, in this invite period, you could also consider creating some sort of incentive that maybe you could mention or drop a little hint that only the people who sign up for the live event are going to get access to some special bonus, or people who sign up for the live event are going to get extra money off or something like that. Why does that matter? Like, because I said, right, that I run the sale to the entire like company-wide, like I send everybody on the email list the sale, not just the people who sign up. So why does it matter? Well, remember what I talked about, the live event of whatever type that you hold, that can often be the thing that gets people over the threshold. So while yes, I sell a lot of ultimate bundles, for example, to people who are just on my email list and who never attended the live webinar, I have a much higher probability of getting them to actually buy the ultimate bundle if they come to the live class, because the live class works well. It nurtures them properly. It gives me the opportunity to have some connection. They get to see me in action, see me teach. I can open up their eyes to a lot of things they might not have known about. And, you know, in my case with a live webinar, they can also ask me questions. So it's super helpful. Okay, so we've gone over the teaser period. We've gone over even the invite period for them to come to your free thing. Now, what about the live event itself? Now, when it comes to actually hosting this live event, I want you to show up with the energy of a class that 80,000 people signed up for. Like, it doesn't matter if five people signed up and only one came, or if 100 signed up, right? It doesn't matter. You really, I'm telling you, it is so important, your energy here. And I need you to commit to yourself, commit to anybody, that you are going to be committed to this process throughout, regardless of how it's going. If I could give you any one piece of advice throughout this entire launch series, it has been that the biggest change and the most impactful change that I've made over the years that I think has directly contributed to such successful launches is that I go in with the same attitude and I keep that attitude regardless of how things are going, right? So you need to go to this live event and you need to be excited to be there. You need to be grateful to the people who signed up and you need to have the energy and enthusiasm of somebody who is open and who is learning and who is there to just see what can happen, right? So you can also work on getting people to be really engaged in the live events, making the live events themselves kind of fun. And I think I've found that over the years by doing that, it's then, you know, led to people referring to their friends to sign up for my webinar because they're like, oh, I went to that. It was fun. It was helpful. So you can hand out prizes, for example. We like to do like most active in the chat. Like we give like, what's it called? Superlatives, right? Like we'll give people like a little gift card or something for being the most helpful, the most engaged, the person who commented the most. We give people prizes for hanging around all the way through. And I'm talking like it can be a $5 Starbucks gift card. It doesn't have to be anything crazy, right? As I mentioned earlier, you could also give out live event only bonuses, like something that only people who come to the live event get, let alone only people who sign up for it. You could even give out prizes to the first person who purchases from the live event or the first three people who purchase from the live event. I did this a few years ago where I think it was maybe the first three or five people who bought from the live webinar got a free 30-minute session with me. So that was really fun to do. You also want to remember that they should get an email right after the live event ends, inviting them to purchase, reminding them of what's included, kind of going over all of the meat and potatoes. At least to me, this email is, it's like, it's okay from my perspective for this email to be more of the like features email. Like this is what you get. That does speak to some people, by the way. I am the kind of buyer who it really frustrates me when people kind of bury it behind all of these like other sales tactics. And I'm like, no, I just want to know, like, what do I get? Like how many videos, how many, like modules, how many pieces of paper? I don't know, whatever. It's like, I just want to know what I get. And sometimes I feel like I struggle to understand that when I look at some people's programs. So I don't at least bury that. And I put that in that initial email. If you can, kind of depending on the software that you use, you can also deliver the replay. Sometimes the replay is not available for a few hours after. So you really want to send them an email immediately after a live webinar ends to let them know to purchase. Some people want to check it out before and they didn't get to see, you know, they want to see like the sales page and they couldn't see that on the live webinar or something like that. And you can remind them of what's included. I also would invite them to respond back and ask you any questions. I think that's like a great opportunity. Essentially, what I'm trying to say is like you want to capitalize on that initial momentum from people coming to your live event and really kind of get them while they're still in that headspace. They remember what it was. They remember why they wanted it and what was included, who you are, all that before, you know, life just comes back in and stuff gets busy and then they forget and then the sale's over. So that's my gist on the kind of teaser, invite, and live event period. Next week, we're going to be talking about the next period, which is the sales period, which I'm really excited to chat with you about because I experimented with a lot this sales period that I had never done before and that I don't really see very many other people doing. And it worked really, really well, not only in email, but on social media too. So before we go today, speaking of social media, I want to answer the Instagram questions that I got from you all about this launch. Okay, so one of our listeners asked on Instagram, how did you keep stress low during the launch? Okay, so there are a couple of things. There's a couple of practical things that I do and then maybe a couple of mindset tips. If you haven't yet, I would go back and listen to episode 207 that I just did with my mindset coach, Jen. It's an episode where you get to kind of like peek into one of our coaching sessions together. And we talked about a lot of the mindset stuff that I put into place in order to make this a low stress launch. So I definitely listen to that. Maybe this is because of my athlete background, but I approach launches like a big game. So for me, I just make sure that like all of my basic needs are really stepped up. So I make sure that I have like really good, nourishing, nutritious food on hand. I do a little bit more meal prep, or I let myself, like I cut myself some slack, you know, budget-wise, that I bought a couple of things that would be easily like reheatable as meals, or I bought like pre-cut, you know, veggies or something, or I bought like a pre-cut mirepoix so I can make an easy soup, like just stuff like that where you're like, this, what does it really matter? It takes me 10, 15 minutes to cut things up. Well, it does matter during a launch. And if it makes the difference between me having access to like eating a lot better food, that makes a big difference to me. Prioritizing my sleep, continuing my exercise routine. Like I go to the gym pretty much every day during the week and sometimes on the weekend. I drink a lot of water, like I take my vitamins. I kind of do all the things to keep myself in as good of shape as I can and to have the energy that I can. I think something I think where I see people make a mistake in this area is that it's like when people plan a wedding, to be honest. So it's like weddings have gotten this reputation of being super stressful and of people being bridezillas and all that kind of stuff. And it's almost like people just start to embody that. And I feel like that's what launches have become, where it's like launches have become this frenzied, stressful, hurried thing. And it's like, it doesn't have to be that way. So I think what's really helped me to keep it as a low stress thing is just not really changing my behavior that much. Like not giving it that energy. Like my energy needs to be up. And that's kind of the way I think of it in terms of like, I want to be excited. I'm kind of like ready to do the darn thing, but that's my energy. And so I don't let myself get too stressed about it. I also think it would be helpful to lower your stress in this area by realizing that not all of this is going to go perfectly, just like a wedding. I guess I'm realizing this is more similar to a wedding than I thought, but it's not going to go perfectly and the wedding's still going to be great, right? And so I think the faster I got used to that, like there is always a problem. There's always a tech glitch. There's always something that happens. And just kind of embracing that that's all part of it and not seeing that as a, like, oh, this whole thing is over or something like that. Last but not least, I would say in terms of keeping your stress low is this idea that I talked about earlier of like maintaining the same amount of energy regardless of how it's going. Because I think part of what gets you really stressed out is building up these like really, really high expectations. And then you kind of crash when you don't feel like things are going as well as you hoped. And then you start stressing that they're going in the wrong direction. And that just causes you a lot of angst and just makes everything worse on top of launching. So I would really encourage you to kind of keep that consistent throughout. All right. Another Terminator on Instagram asked, what was the warming up process? So hopefully you got a really good answer to that question today in terms of warming people up. And I emphasize enough how much like I find it really helpful to share with people what you have coming, what's in store, but really why that's a good thing for them, what's in it for them, and why should they care about this? Another Terminator on Instagram asked, what did you try this time that was different? So I definitely tried a lot of different things when it came to the teaser period. So in the teaser period, I think doubled down on this engagement idea that I talked about earlier in the episode, really having multiple different points of getting people to engage. I know I mentioned the one of having people respond back with like a 1 through 10 kind of thing. We also had, this was a really good email. We had an email that went out that was like, what's one question you're hoping I answer in the live class? And that was super helpful because then that also gave me some data that I needed as well as to like what people were coming to this class to hopefully learn. And I actually changed up the content in the webinar, which I have never done before. So I think that was something else. And that's something I see a lot in business too, is that sometimes we have an idea of like the way something should go or what we should teach, what they need to learn. But sometimes if we ask, we can get a lot of feedback about what they actually want from us. And the more we can put our own egos aside and integrate that, I think the better. So I definitely did that. We did the buy-in thing that I talked about where we kind of got people to be like, are you committing to the month of February being the month that you're going to get this legal stuff in order? We're not putting it off anymore. Like, it felt kind of cool. It felt like a little like boot campy. And I thought that was really cool. So at least so far of what you've heard in part one and part two of the series, that's the biggest thing that I did differently. Next week in part three, you're going to hear about all the things I did differently in the sales period. Our next Terminator on Instagram asked, how did you have so much success without buying ads? Or how can someone have success? Sorry. How can someone have success without buying ads? So this is a very good question because although I run Facebook ads now, I did not always run Facebook ads. And so Facebook ads, I think what gets confusing to people about ads is that they think that Facebook ads like do all the lifting. And I would encourage you to see ads more as like a boost. So to me, they're like the gasoline on the fire. They're not the fire itself. So you can start the fire and you can build like a really healthy fire once you have enough capital, it's a great thing to, you know, and what, because you know something's working and something's selling already organically, then it's great to invest in ads and pour gasoline on it. So I just want people to know that, like, part of what I see a little bit behind this question is, like, there's no, like, ads are not going to resolve something that's already not selling. It's just going to amplify something that's already selling well, right? So you can have lots of success without buying ads, because I think that if you're focusing on your email list and you have been following step zero religiously, which I taught in part one of this series, then you have already done a lot of the groundwork that you needed to do prior to this launch. And those people those people on your list, like, that's probably where the bulk of your sales are going to come from, right? You might get a smattering on social media. Those people on social media, even who buy, are probably already on your email list, but, like, you're probably going to get most of your sales from email, because we buy products through email, not typically through social media. So especially if they're more expensive, right? So I would focus on success without ads on building my list, in getting a really good email engagement, right? And having a lot of value in nurturing my email, and then running really good sales emails to my email, and then having an all-out blitz across social media and anywhere else that you appear, like a podcast, YouTube channel that talks about your sale as well. Last but not least, our Terminator asked, how did you get so much organic reach? Also, how did you identify each? So I think behind this question might be that I shared on Instagram that the majority of our sales out of that 300,000 in revenue that we generated in a week came from our own stuff, not from ads, right? So it came from my email list, from social media, from stuff that I've done, not necessarily to somebody clicking on a Facebook ad. Now, there's always, like, a little bit of an asterisk in this conversation as you run ads for longer and longer, because technically speaking, somebody could have found me from an ad a long time ago, and then they could still be on my email list. However, we can account for that in the data. And so those people should technically not be counting as the organic people. They should technically still fall under the ads, because our ads team can actually see that someone was already, like, had signed up for my, let's say they signed up for my webinar like a year and a half ago, but they just never bought, and then through an ad. And then now they're just been on my list the whole time, and now they buy. They should still attribute that to the ads. They have that technology. So I think that our numbers are actually pretty accurate, but there's always some wiggle room both ways. I think that this is the same question that I just answered. I think it's very similar to the same, like, question that I just answered, because you can work on organic reach by doing the very things that we just talked about, where you're building your email list, you're showing up consistently on social media, you're sharing valuable education-driven content, you're really learning your customer's language and speaking directly to them. I think a lot of what I talked about in part one will hopefully help you in this area, and talk about how you can build so much of this up organically. You don't need to rely on ads. Again, ads just help things that are already working. They will not fix things that are not working. They won't fix things that are broken. And so it's really, like, you, it's funny, because actually now that I'm thinking about this, I'm like thinking, you actually have to have organic reach. You have to have success without buying ads first in order to be able to buy ads, because the ads won't work if you didn't have success in the first place. So that's kind of where I'm going to leave you, and where I would encourage you to think about things. And if you haven't yet, go back and listen to part one of the series. With that, I can't wait for part three next week. I can't believe it's part three already, but we'll be talking all about sales, including my new sales strategy on social media. I'll see you then. Thanks so much for listening to the On Your Terms podcast. Make sure to follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. You can also check out all of our podcast episodes, show notes, links, and more at samvanderweelen.com/podcast. You can learn more about legally protecting your business and take my free legal workshop, 5 Steps to Legally Protect and Grow Your Online Business, at samvanderweelen.com. And to stay connected and follow along, follow me on Instagram at samvanderweelen and send me a DM to say hi. Just remember that although I am a attorney, I am not your attorney, and I am not offering you legal advice in today's episode. This episode and all of my episodes are informational and educational only. It is not a substitute for seeking out your own advice from your own lawyer. And please keep in mind that I can't offer you legal advice. I don't ever offer any legal services, but I think I offer some pretty good information.